Let's enjoy. Well, the rest of the Wire team are off enjoying today's public holiday, but please stay with me for a look at women in journalism in Women in the Bear Pit.
You've got rid of one tax today, but you're also bringing in at least two new taxes, and there's a tax increase. That's after promising no new taxes. Is it fair enough that people ask questions about your honesty when they see that?
Next time you face the voters, why should they trust what you say?
In journalism, that's the bear pit, the place where those in power are held to account in real time, on screen and on air, by tough journalists. And increasingly, those doing the grilling are women. It wasn't always like this.
And another first, because I have one of Australia's most distinguished citizens with me. I have with me the Leader of the Opposition, Mr. Arthur Cornwell.
Binny Lum was a well-known and loved radio star of the 50s and 60s. She did wide-ranging interviews with everyone from musicians to politicians, but would never have expected to ask a tough question.
The way you were just there, not being anything to do with politics, just having a nice, cosy chat with the Chinese. How long is it since you learned Chinese?
Women's voices were certainly heard on radio from the beginning, but it was graceful questions and light topics. Today, we'll take a look at how in just four short decades, women have moved into the challenging roles in media, at how hard it's been to get audiences used to female voices on air, at how women have gone about establishing the credibility to ask the hard-hitting questions, and about whether more women in media might be changing the very nature of what we call news. First, back to the noisier newsrooms of the 1970s and 80s, and let's meet four women who blazed the female trail into the radio studios and onto the screens.
From the beginning, the women were in a kind of different space to the men.
Claire Martin is best known as the former Chief Minister of the Northern Territory, but she began her career as a young journalist with the ABC's AM and PM programs. In the late 70s, when women were still the exception in current affairs.
We would often be told we wouldn't make it. And the irony was that of the four I started with, I worked for the ABC for 17 years. The other woman I started with worked for 30 years. And the two men left quite quickly.
Well, you just had to put your head down and really work.
Alex Sloan found it still a boys' club when she began with the ABC in Canberra a decade later.
You put up with the blokes going to the pub and the blokes cutting you out of conversation, and you just kind of thought, well, I'll just work hard. And that's what I did.
About the same time, over in Melbourne, Virginia Hausiger was beginning her career covering politics.
Press conferences, the voices of female journalists, and we were, you know, those who were there were quite young. The voices were drowned out. We were talked over. We had to fight for space. And the speaking politicians, which we usually it would have been a premier or ministers, would tend to give their attention, whether it was deliberate or not, I don't know, but their attention to the rather aggressive male journalists, without a doubt. It was tough to be heard. It was certainly tough to be taken seriously.
And also in Melbourne, Virginia Trioli was starting out at The Age, the first step on a path that would lead to her current role as a hard-hitting interviewer on ABC News 24.
It became pretty clear early on that the news was sort of divided up, almost along gender lines. Courts and police rounds and trade union rounds were all done by men. And the women who did do that work, you could certainly as a woman go into those areas, but, you know, a certain degree of kind of blokiness was required. You know, you really had to be one of the boys.
For women working in media, and particularly in broadcast, a lot of it was about the voice.
There was certainly a bias against women who had higher voices. I was very lucky. I was born with a deep female voice. I learned how to use it. You didn't have a voice that had some kind of lower tones in it and could express some authority, then you were disadvantaged.
My voice register, I've got quite a big range, but when you knew, like, this person is not going to take any nonsense, you would drop your register. There's just no doubt about it. And I would have criticism, you know, maybe even when I got home, if I'd been in quite a feisty interview, to say, oh, your voice register's going up, you sound shrill.
Alex Sloan found out in an early interview with Bob Hawke just how having a female voice can send the wrong message in the world of current affairs.
I was doing an interview with him and he said, "You sound like you're laughing," and hung up on me. My producer actually got him back, and once he got back on the line, I went, "I'm really sorry, Mr. Hawke, it's just who I am. I've got a bit of a laugh in my voice." And once I told him that, he was fine and he did the interview okay. But, yeah, that was one of my most famous, like, you know, get the tone right, Alex.
And things haven't changed that much. Listen to young Channel 9 reporter Alice Monfrey's much more recent experiences.
When I first started out in reporting, you know, I'd find myself really lowering my voice to try and make myself sound a bit older or perhaps a little bit more masculine. And even, you know, going into a political interview, I find the politics are sort of the most male-driven areas of news. And I'd find myself really trying to, you know, make my voice lower and almost shout to be heard over the men, because quite often, you know, all the political reporters are generally male and a lot of the politicians that we're trying to get questions to are male, and it's almost like trying to get my voice heard was almost impossible, and you almost sound like you're becoming more shrieking or shrill, like as a woman trying to get your voice up there. So I think I've really, as I've developed confidence over the years, changed my tactic with that. So rather than, you know, trying to match the men, I just use my own energy, and maybe that is feminine, but I'm okay with that. So sometimes I might wait till they've all had their blokey moment of yelling over the top of each other, and then I'll come in with the questions that I feel are still quite hard-hitting, but I don't feel I need to yell them or scream over other people to have them heard. There's still the chance to get those questions in, and in fact they always have more impact when I'm not competing against other people.
Virginia Trioli says trying to get your voice taken seriously is still quite a preoccupation for female journalists.
I have a lot of people contacting me, you know, over the years after the work that I've done on radio and television about, you know, their voice, and they've been told to drop their voice. And I always tell them, don't you dare. A, because it's bad for your voice. You will, you know, grow nodules on your vocal cords if you misuse your voice. And also, the world has to be prepared to hear women's voices.
Since Aristotle, and no doubt long before, there have been complaints about the female voice. Silence is a woman's glory, was Aristotle's take. Scold and nag are just a couple of ways to describe women speaking that never could be applied to men. Certainly in the history of radio and right up to the present day, women announcers have been constantly complained about in a way that men never have. In 2016, an all-female lineup on a Brisbane station attracted complaints about giggling and poor quality voices. So what's going on? Time to meet a voice expert.
Hello, Annie. I'm Marilyn Bodycote. I'm the voice coach at the ABC and also the voice coach at Channel 9. So I train newsreaders, reporters.
What is it about the female voice? It seems forever it's annoyed males particularly, but even females. There seems to be criticism throughout the ages of the quality of a female voice.
Well, that's exactly the right word to use, quality, because what it is resonance. So often what happens is that women don't naturally develop their resonance, and resonance is the natural amplification of the sound. So it's the strength, it's the basis of voice projection, it's the carrying power, and it brings authority.
Is it about lowering the pitch of your voice, though? Because a lot of women object to the fact that they should have to do that to sound more like a man.
No, it's not about lowering your pitch. The problem is that people think that lowering the voice is going to give you resonance, and it's not. And in fact, it creates problems because it gives you what's called vocal fatigue, because the voice is meant to be pushed down. It's meant to go forward and be free.
So your advice to women starting out in a fairly hard-nosed media environment, what's your advice to them if they feel their voice is being ineffective?
To get some training. I mean, what's really important is that you are true to your voice. And if your voice is not effective enough in the field that you're working in, then you seek out someone like me. You seek out to train it to be the best you can be.
Okay, so you've worked on your unfortunately female voice and managed to get noticed, managed to fight your way into a job doing the hard interviews. Let's ask our pioneers how they established their credibility then. Claire Martin says rigorous early training helped her to hold her nerve in those tense clashes with powerful interviewees.
A lot of times, because you're working in that current affairs space, there was an idea that you had to be adversarial. But if you started to be too adversarial, you could lose control and it became about you and them. And what we were taught was always to keep the subject and what you were trying to achieve in the interview, because, you know, you do an interview for a purpose, keep that foremost so that you built your questions around that, you stayed with your questions and the integrity of them. And part of that was to get the best out of a person in some ways, but it also gave you the capacity to root out any hypocrisy or inconsistency.
There was one politician I know who used to call me the smiling assassin. So it was the warning, like, she's very smiling and she's very friendly, but just be really careful about her questions. So, yeah, well, I thought, well, he's probably not far from the truth. I thought it's not a bad assessment, because I always tried to keep it friendly but fair. So I established that fairly early on, and for most of my tougher interviews, most of my time on local radio, I had a male chief minister, John Stanhope, who was, you know, pretty feisty, would whack it back, but I think he respected me in the end. And in fact, when he left, he asked me to do his farewell sort of interview. But, you know, it was combative, but there was absolutely a mutual respect there.
But an assertive woman can be read as aggressive, as Virginia Trioli found in 2001 when she was questioning Peter Reith about the Children Overboard affair.
Reith, there's nothing in this photo that indicates these people either jumped or were thrown.
You're now questioning the veracity of what is being said. Those photos are produced as evidence. Do you still question it? Do you?
I'm a journalist. I'll question anything until I get the proof.
I've just given you the evidence.
No, you've given me images.
Well, Virginia, if you don't accept that, you don't accept anything I say.
Listeners hated it.
A big part of the backlash that we received that afternoon on air on 774 Drive was about a woman, you know, asking these hard questions of a minister and giving as good as she got. And, you know, you could just tell by the nature of the complaints and the responses that we got that there was a gendered aspect to that discomfort on the other end of the radio. You know, they just did not like hearing a woman being antsy with a minister. Now, I think a great deal of that has changed simply because of the number and the nature of women's voices on radio and on television. I mean, all the key political interviewers really around at the moment are women.
A couple of decades later, audiences still often react badly when a woman interviewer goes in too hard. As Lisa Wilkinson found out a couple of years ago when trying to get an answer from Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull about how many refugees would be going to the US.
Is it more or less than 1,000?
Over that time of... Look, I'm. Thanks very much for the interrogation. Let me just say this to you.
I think it's fairly important.
This is a huge announcement. It is a huge announcement.
The public complained that she was rude and aggressive, something that Virginia Hausiger still finds extraordinary.
Well, you know, this is the public just being playing stupid. I mean, you only need to listen to a number of the interviews that Kostev Novak does, for example, where he's outrageously rude to the Prime Minister, to ministers. He talks about, I don't want to hear this and I don't want to hear that, and that's not what I'm asking you. He's really, really disrespectful to an interviewee, period. So for viewers and listeners to complain about Wilkinson, you know, being like a dog with a bone in insisting on an answer, is a really sexist response. And, yes, it's expected of Carl the bloke and not expected of Lisa the woman. You know, and that's just pathetic. You know, that's why I say we as women journalists and media professionals haven't done enough to change the environment so that the viewer and the listener accepts women as authorities, as news authorities. That said, I don't think that politicians expect a softer, more gentle, more nuanced interview by women than men. I think they are well used to the fact that there are now some really sharp shooting women journalists out there, particularly political commentators and political journalists, and they need to be on their guard, you know, just as much as they are with a bloke who might be, you know, a bit more brazen and arrogant.
So if the public still have different standards for male and female interviewers, what about the interviewees? I asked Virginia Trioli if she ever feels that powerful male interviewees react differently to being questioned by a woman, no matter how thorough her credibility.
It's interesting. A part of me sort of wants to almost leave it to the viewer to kind of make up their own mind. I mean, I had a similar experience when Malcolm Turnbull was on that special Q&A at the end of last year, which I hosted, and which was, you know, when we get the Prime Minister or the Leader of the Opposition on, it's just them, it's no panel. And so it's, you know, an hour with the Prime Minister and an audience asking questions. And it really did occur to me halfway through that Q&A, I thought, would he behave this way with Tony? Would he behave this way with a male presenter? And I genuinely don't know the answer to that, but he was unusually stroppy with me. He was sort of blanking me and refusing to maintain eye contact. He was getting very, very cross with me whenever I followed up with a question, and his manner with me was rather chippy and, as I say, you know, cross and a bit sort of resentful. It was very odd. It occurred to, you know, it was obvious to a lot of people because I got contacted by many people saying, my goodness me, what went on there? And things are perfectly cordial between us, you know, before we went on air. So I don't know. Was that a particular way of dealing with a female interviewer? I really can't answer that. And I suspect for some subjects there still is that degree of resentment or irritation when a woman persists. But, you know, to be honest, women journalists occupy that ground now in Australia so completely that you're on a hiding to nothing if you're actually clinging to that point of view or wanting to behave that way. You know, it ain't going to work, and the you know, the ship has sailed on that. Women occupy those places and have done for quite some time, so, you know, get on board.
But is it different if you're a young female journalist? Does Channel 9's Alice Monfries ever feel that she's been treated differently to a male interviewer?
Definitely, there is a little bit of bias, particularly being not only a woman but also a young woman. Perhaps the way your questions are initially perceived is almost with a little bit of a smirk before an answer, and that used to really infuriate me, not just in politics but also going out to sport interviews. I found that early on, you know, I might go out to perhaps a football conference, AFL law, or whether it's even with the Reds, with the soccer as well. And there's almost like a sort of smirk or a grimace before answering one of the girls' questions, because what could they possibly know about what they're asking? But I think, again, a lot of why that may happen is when women aren't being themselves, when they're feeling this pressure to try and match the guys. Perhaps they're putting on a bit of a fake voice, and or perhaps they're, you know, being more aggressive than is naturally in their nature because they feel that's the way they need to be. You know, that's the way they need to act to make themselves heard. But I found personally, from the moment that I stopped trying to be someone else or trying to match the guys and trusted my own interviewing style and my own voice and my own way of questioning, that was much more effective, and I didn't notice that bias as much.
Women are very visible these days in the hard news space, but are they changing news as we know it? Behind the scenes, most major editorial jobs in Australia are still occupied by men. So are we still gazing at news through male eyes? Virginia Hausiger thinks so.
We haven't changed the space. You know, more and more women have piled or poured into newsrooms, but we haven't changed the, you know, the template like we should have. What we've done is model ourselves predominantly on a male model of how we go about our work. I mean, when I was very young in the newsroom, and particularly when I moved into TV current affairs pretty quickly, and I would argue about story choice all the time with my executive producers, I felt that our story choice was really quite narrow, and that women as viewers, as audience, their, you know, wider myriad of interests and issues weren't being taken into account. And again, it's because all the editors, the editorial team were male, and so those who made judgments about news value were male. And I don't think we've changed that enough, you know, or as much as we should have. You know, we still have a very sexist approach to stories, in particularly on television news in Australia, where we tend to think of soft stories as being the female stories and girl stories and stories that, you know, the mums might be interested in. Well, it's crap, you know, it's really crap, but we play into that. You know, the Australian television news and current affairs media really has a lot to answer for when it comes to gender stereotyping. You know, Australia's a very sexist place.
Now, are things different in other places, for example, New Zealand?
Yeah,
Yeah, well, New Zealand's a great example. I mean, not only do they have their third female prime minister, and every public sector has at some stage in New Zealand been led by women. Right now in New Zealand, all the mainstream media outlets, their political bureaus are headed by women.
So has that made a difference to the shape of news in New Zealand?
I actually don't think it's changed that much. And if anything, the depth of reporting, the willingness to challenge authority figures is even more than it was in the past.
That's Bernard Hickey. He's a parliamentary reporter in New Zealand. He says the media there is changing, but he doesn't believe it's because of the increasing domination of women in the industry.
There are other factors at work in the media, apart from the gender split, that are driving coverage. We now have, you know, much shorter television items, much less long-form political interviewing. We don't have the formats anymore for, you know, very long, in-depth pieces, particularly on commercial television. That's gone. And, of course, the newspapers are shrinking here, just as they are in Australia. So I think that the gender split is less of a factor in how we cover public life than in some of the other structural media economics reasons for changes.
Alice Monfries sees a more positive side to the changing media scene, a chance to break free from the strict formats that have always governed news.
When I first started out, it was all around that hard-hitting 6 o'clock news. It was only news if it was maybe negative or if it was something that was having a huge, heavy, hard impact. Whereas in the last few years in particular, as we've made that shift online and we're also rolling out news bulletins right throughout the day and our afternoon news bulletin, our target audience for that is stay-at-home mums or retirees or young families. And so we actually have more women watching our news than men, so it's crucial that we have the audience in mind when we're pulling that news together. So I think we're really starting to understand here in news that whilst there is certainly a place for, and it's crucial, it's really important that is where a lot of people turn to get answers and to find information, and they do want that hard news as well. People also want light and shade in their life. They don't want to be feeling negative all the time, and they want to see examples of people they can relate to. Quite often that is women doing things that they think that's inspiring for them, and they think, hey, I can do that too.
So now let's check out the next generation of female journalists waiting in the wings. How did they view their futures?
My name's Bonnie Parker and I graduated a journalism degree last year, so I'm looking for a job at the moment.
Are you keen to get into that hard interviewing space?
Yeah, I think so. I don't see it as my gender being the obstacle to becoming the next Lee Sales or whatever else. That's not the thing that I think is going to be the issue.
Just getting a job.
Yeah, just there's so many people, women or men, that are competing for the jobs.
I'm Rachel and I'm a recent Bachelor of Media graduate. My original plan as a journalist was to go into sports journalism because I'm a massive AFL fan, but I've sort of expanded my goals to basically wherever I can tell people's stories. And part of that is because watching AFL and watching the way that it's covered, you sort of see that the people who are given the respect in the industry are the men who used to play football. And you see them with a lot less training. They could be 2 years out of the game and suddenly they've got the high-profile jobs. Whereas the women in that industry, you see them more belittled for doing a more traditional journalism role, for breaking stories, for being a little bit more hard-hitting in their journalism instead of just being part of the boys' club. Whereas outside of that sport industry, I tend to believe that I would have a little bit more of respect and a little bit more opportunities to tell other stories.
So you think that looking around, women have taken their place pretty well outside of sport in the media, but in sport there's a gender issue.
Sport is probably the final frontier when it comes to gender equality, because it's so much about who's the strongest and the fastest and all of that.
If women ran sports journalism, do you think we'd see different stories?
Yeah, I think we would. I think we'd potentially see a wider range of stories, because a lot of sports journalism is about talking to your friends, because your friends are the ones who are playing the sport and your friends are the ones next to you, whereas women, and you see it in the coverage of women's sport, they have to come up with different stories and they have to sort of look at it more in depth.
40 years on, it's pretty clear that women have firmly taken their place in the so-called bear pit. They've managed to live with having their voices dismissed as shrill or weak and with being accused of being mean to their interviewees if they demand answers. All these women have been viciously trolled on social media. It comes with the territory. And there are equity battles, plenty of them, yet to be won. But, as Virginia Trioli observes, there's a lot of satisfaction in having inspired generations of women to get their voices into the public conversation.
I mean, I was at a conference the other day and it was, you know, it was genuinely overwhelming to be approached by so many women across an extraordinary age group, you know, from women in their 90s, you know, down to young women in their early 20s, and saying how much they valued what I'd said and what I did and the role that I occupied, you know, in the ABC. And it was, it makes absolutely everything worthwhile, because you can only be what you can see. And it clearly meant a great deal to those younger women in particular to have that kind of voice and that sort of person present in their lives. And it clearly mattered something to the older women to know that, you know, that their daughters and their granddaughters were growing up in a similar way and had found a voice and were confident in themselves.
Prime Minister, we will have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time this morning. I know it's a busy day for you.
Thank you.
We'll find out more this evening. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Treasurer.
Great to be
here. Tony Abbott, there's always lots of things to ask you, but I'm afraid we're out of time. Thank you very much for making time to speak to us.
Thank you.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
You're like a switch. You belong to you.